Sorting out COVID technology questions. The return of our favorite tech gurus. Chances are you have interacted with technology this past year in ways you never had before. Are you participating in meetings on Zoom? Have you had a virtual doctor's appointment or taken a virtual class? Are you listening to the radio on your smart speaker instead of your car radio? Binge watching TV shows on your smart TV? Or maybe even becoming addicted to a fitness device like a Fitbit or Apple Watch? I'm Jennifer Rooks. As the use of personal technology accelerates, we all have questions, and that's where our tech team comes in. Whether you are thinking of buying something new, caring for the equipment you have, or just figuring something out, they will take your questions. That's next on Main Calling. But first, this news update. Welcome to Main Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. With many of us working from home these days, making sure the technology we rely upon is up and running is more important than ever. Today, our tech team is back to share the latest gadgets they have their eyes on and to help us all make sure our laptops, computers, smart speakers, and other devices are keeping us connected. My guest, Janet McKenney, Director of Library Development with the Maine State Library, Andrew Rosenstein, owner of TechPort, and Jared Maxfield, the owner of Necessary Technology. We welcome your comments and questions. This is for you. Send an email, a brief email, to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling. Post a comment to our Facebook page or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Janet, Jared, Andrew, welcome back to Maine Calling.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So I just need to start by saying that my sister-in-law, Trish, has said that she believes that when this pandemic is all over, we need to have a big international party, which is IT Department Appreciation Day, that all of you and everybody else I know, the IT department at Maine Public, have really had to make miracles to keep everybody online and working and productive in the last year. It's been something, hasn't it, Janet?
It really has. So many people that were tech phobic or anti-tech have really been drawn in, and you know, some still hate it, you know, and are begrudgingly using it because it's really the only way to connect with family or connect to work. And so a lot of training, you know, on the spot has happened to, you know, really help people, you know, learn the bit that they need to stay connected.
Okay. Jared, I'll start with you. At your store, what are you seeing most? What are the problems people are bringing to you? Is it the same as usual, or is it different during the pandemic?
Well, it's been a busy year, to say the least. We've, of course, see the same issues that we've always seen, just with more volume, because, you know, if you think of the simple things like, you know, liquid spills, knocking over a glass of water and things like that, just with folks working at home and schooling from home, you know, all these problems and more time with these devices have just led to larger volume. There's definitely some, I don't know, I think of some COVID specific issues that we've seen. I've probably seen more cameras burnt out in laptops in the last year than I've seen in the last 5 years combined. I think a lot of laptops especially are being pressed to some of their limits when it comes to running things like Zoom and things like that. So always trying to help people be on the lookout for some of those issues, especially heat. You know, a lot of these machines, when you're running something like a Zoom and you've got other programs and applications and tabs open, a lot of folks might notice their fans are running pretty hard or heat issues. And, you know, that tends to essentially burn out machines. So, you know, we've seen a lot of the same things, but a lot of new things that seem to be kind of exasperated or exasperated and brought back and by just COVID and people using their machines, frankly, in different ways than they used them before.
Andrew, what about at your shop? What are you seeing?
Yeah, we're seeing some of the very same issues that Jared's talking about, especially people that are using smaller laptops to run everything, their camera, their You know, some of these smaller laptops are really not designed for the best airflow. So parts tend to heat up quite a bit, and I've seen a lot of board failures due to overheating boards, because either the computer might be used on a soft surface, like let's not, you know, point any fingers, but maybe if you're working in bed and you've got the laptop propped up on your comforter, that's going to constrict airflow. And that will, if you're on a meeting or running heavy software that is taxing a smaller computer, maybe with limited RAM or limited processing speed, the machine's going to overheat sooner or later. So, and that's what causes the damage.
So there's some helpful tips in here. So, you know, maybe not the best idea to prop your laptop on a pillow while you're doing work. And maybe not even people may be working at the dining room table who have put down some sort of placemat or pad. Sounds like that may not be the best idea.
Right. Any soft surface, because often the airflow to smaller laptops is hidden sometimes behind the display hinge. There, if you turn your machine upside down, you might be able to see vents through that display hinge. So anything that is on the bottom of the machine that constricts airflow is going to cause your machine to have to work harder to keep cool. And often those tiny little fans in smaller laptops just can't pull enough air through to cool components. I mean, the same thing could be said for any larger laptops, but you should always be using your machine on a hard, flat surface.
And Jared, I want to add to the tips on preventing overheating. If someone has been on, you used the example of a Zoom meeting, or has been doing something and they noticed their computer getting warm, even if you have more work to do, is it a good idea to sort of turn it off for 5 or 10 minutes?
It's really good to turn it off, honestly, and bring it somewhere to be looked at, because, you know, and this is a problem that we've also run into the last year, which is, you know, people are, as we're working, we need our machines so much more. So unfortunately, oftentimes, you know, we'll find that a customer is being hopeful, to say it lightly, and hoping that they can just keep running the machine and that it won't become a problem. But essentially, it's like if you were, you know, overheating, you know, if your temperature kept going up and you just kept running and running and running and running, eventually you will collapse, and so will the machine. And then unfortunately, that can make what could be a small issue, such as a clogged or a failing fan, which are typically relatively inexpensive repairs or things to deal with, into a much bigger issue, which then turns into a much longer downtime with your machine. So I really can't preach enough. We always tell people, outside of a bucket of water, heat's your number one enemy for your machine. So if you have heat issues, if you have those symptoms, it's best not to ignore them. And the last thing I'll throw in on that is also avoid, a lot of folks say, well, don't worry, I bought like a cooling pad. You know, you can buy on Amazon or places these cooling pads, and they will, in fact, cool the outside of the machine because they're made of metal or plastic, and you'll feel like it's cooler. But oftentimes in the middle of the machine where you're actually running that heat, you still have the issue. You're just masking it. So it can really make a small issue much bigger than it needs to be. So I really plead with people, just don't ignore it, because it's easy to deal with.
I was going to go to Tony and Milo, but I just lost him. I think he was going to repeat some of the advice you all are giving. And Jared, what do you mean by when you say even to elevate it a little bit? Are there tools to do that? Or do you mean set it maybe on a couple books?
Well, I mean, if you're, well, to Andrew's point, especially if you're on something cloth or blocking the ports, prop it up, get it at a little bit of an angle. I used to take my old HP that would overheat and put a stapler underneath it, just anything to get it up and off an angle so that it can breathe. But in the long run, if it is overheating, if your fans are running hard, if you feel heat, if your machine is slowing down or really running kind of wonky at the same time where it seems to be hot, then, you know, that's all symptoms of an issue that should be dealt with. Otherwise, you really risk, you know, losing your entire machine.
All right. And I do have Tony from Milo now. Tony, I understand you want to add to this conversation about overheating laptops.
Yes, yes. Just wanted to say, like, I don't know if it's an industry-wide trick or something, but the name laptop is like a misnomer. It should never be on your lap. These guys are correct about soft materials and stuff like that. It should be on a TV tray if you have one, or maybe even on a nice-sized book, but never on your lap. That's why they overheat. Cooling pads aren't a bad idea either, but I use laptops all the time and hardly ever have any trouble with them. But ones that I do bring in and have to fix are ones that people have had on their lap.
All right. Well, Tony, I understand you also work in this industry. Any other tips before we let you go?
Well, no, that'd be the biggest one with laptops. A cooling pad's not a bad idea, but never on your lap or any kind of material, you know, at all. It should be on a hard surface when you're using it. TV trays are great, you know. Put it on a TV tray and prop it up a tiny bit.
Thank you so much for your call. Janet McKenney, we've been talking a little bit about Zoom and also, of course, in terms of how it can overheat a computer. But I want to talk about how people can make mistakes on Zoom. So many of us doing virtual meetings who have never really either have never done it before or not with such regularity. Everybody in the world, I think, has seen the Zoom cat video, which is, I don't know about you, but I can't watch it often enough. Janet, what tips do you have for people using Zoom? How to make sure that you don't find yourself embarrassing yourself with a filter? What are you hearing from people who come in to either the Maine State Library or other libraries with questions about Zoom?
Well, you know, I think the biggest thing is to do a pre-meeting check and, you know, like launch, you know, get into your Zoom app and immediately check, you know, your microphone and whether you have the right microphone attached. And also, you know, if there is any at all filter attached, whether your name is correct. I think a lot is happening at homes where people are sharing computers. You know, if you're the only one, unless you have a really devious teenager who has the intent of maybe ruining your day or playing a joke, it's more about those households that are sharing computers. So checking the filter, checking, there are places that you can, Zoom has a place where you can go and check the connection and it'll check your camera and check your microphone. And that's always a good idea, especially if you're sharing a computer. And, you know, so you don't end up being a cat or other entity on Zoom because there is a filter or inappropriate picture there or an inappropriate background that's been preloaded by somebody else.
Jared or Andrew, before we move on, any other tips about using virtual software like Zoom for meetings?
Well, I think that the most important thing that people forget is that they need to have separate accounts. If we're sharing computers with kids or with other family members, a spouse, that both Mac and Windows allow you to make separate, distinct accounts. So you can keep your personal data separate from your business data. And also, you know, you've got your account that the kids don't play games on and things like that. So that can do a lot to shut down any kind of accidental Zoom filters that pop up and things like that, because nobody's been in your account except you.
Gotcha. Jared, anything more?
No, I think they both covered it very well.
Okay.
I would just say be careful on Zoom. It's been a great tool, but people have also ruined their lives and careers and become YouTube jokes. So always pay attention to the details.
All right. We have such good calls coming in. I'm going to go to a couple now. We're going to go to Jessica in Acton. Hi, Jessica. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. It's a complete change of topic because what we need here is we don't have great reception on cell phone, but we do have the internet, and I would like to know what computer to buy, you know, to set up my next computer as a command center and a call center for the house so that we can do everything on it.
Jared, I'll start with you.
And for blackouts including, you know what I mean? The whole works.
I kind of know what you mean. I mean, you know, for blackouts, you're going to need some sort of battery backup device. I mean, you can hook that up to really anything, computer included. If you lose power in blackouts, oftentimes you are going to lose internet just by a function of whoever your utility is. But, I mean, you can get phones. I guess if you're saying if you want to run your internet and phone services, you know, instead of using a poor cell connection through your computer, I mean, that can all certainly be done. You know, it's going to rely on your internet connection coming into your home, but as long as that's strong and good, you should be able to run virtually everything through any decent machine.
So, okay, Jared, so there's
no way to run a computer without using the internet, without using a cell phone?
Do you want to be and be connected to the internet, or you just want to run?
What I would like to have is that in a period where perhaps we don't have power. In our case, we do have a generator, so we'll at least have power. But if the internet goes out, cell phones still work, right? But I want my computer to still work. So what,
Jessica,
would I need to do that?
Are you saying that you would like your computer to work to be able to, for example, write on it?
I want my computer to be like the household phone.
Do you want your computer to be able to continue to be connected to the internet even if you lose your internet service?
To the internet or to whatever else is available out there, like a cell phone perhaps. I know there's something global. You know, I don't know what it is. But what we have, our problem here is our phones won't work. So we don't really use our cell phones here. But because of demands like needing to do teleconferencing and stuff like that, our computers are getting a little old. I'm going to be buying at least one new one. And I figure if I'm upgrading, how do I get the machine that's going to get me through the next 10 years being able to communicate regardless of what happens around me? You know what I mean?
Unfortunately, there's no machine that will. I mean, you have to have an internet connection or a cell connection or some way to reach out to the outside world, which, depending on the level of power loss or whatever's going on, could be limited. But there are plenty of good machines you can purchase. Andrew will tell you about. There's Macs, there's PCs that you can purchase that would do all sorts of things. But you know, if there are going to be certain times though where unfortunately you are cut off and you're pretty limited. The only thing, especially as you get out, there are, you know, satellite services, but again, they're going to rely on power, but they might be able to keep you connected, not at a fast rate, but those are always a possibility. But depending on what happens, I mean, there's no 100% answer for every situation.
And Andrew, when Jessica does have power and does have internet, just about any machine she would be able to use also for phone, correct?
Right. Many of it's called voice over internet protocol, and there are many phone companies out there that offer software that allows you to make calls from your computer, and you can dial just like it's a phone. But if you don't have power, then that can be an issue. In Maine, the best combination for our weather conditions is a generator, small generator, plus a battery backup system for your computer. So that way you're not running your computer directly off of the generator, because sometimes that power can be kind of iffy and uneven for computers. So you've got a device that conditions the power, that offers you battery backup. And in some cases, if you're network equipment is attached to this battery backup or generator, then you can still access the internet. Often those connections go down when our cable modems go down, but they may still be available for a briefer. Sometimes if it's a long power outage, you know, those, they work on generators and batteries as well, and those can go down too.
Jessica, thank you for your question. And Andrew, to your point here, the setup I have broadcasting here from my home, our technical team has given me a backup battery, even though my family has a generator, to protect mm-hmm. the equipment that I'm sitting in front of right now. Jessica, thank you so much for your call. So many calls and questions coming in. If you would like to join, if you have one of them, if you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post on our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Waterville Creates, encouraging you to support arts and culture in Central Maine by making your gift today at watervillecreates.org.
Hi, I'm Carol Off. Every Day, As It Happens, connects you with stories in the news by connecting with the people connected with those stories. For nearly 50 years, we have done that using one simple tool, the telephone. Whether the story is political, personal, or just peculiar, we'll find out one phone call at a time. As It Happens, where there's always a lot on the line.
As It Happens, weekday evenings at 9 here on Maine Public Radio. The PBS NewsHour on Maine Public Television provides in-depth news and analysis of the issues that matter to you. It can be seen weekday evenings at 6, 7, and 11. The NewsHour brings you the top stories, objectively examined and discussed in-depth with differing viewpoints. It's television news you can trust, helping make sense of our complicated and ever-changing world. The PBS NewsHour at 6, 7, and 11, weeknights on Maine Public Television.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, our tech team is back to answer your personal technology questions. Joining me, Andrew Rosenstein, who is the owner of TechPort, Jared Maxfield, the owner of Necessary Technology, Janet McKenney, the director of library development at the Maine State Library. Share your comments or questions via email at talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. I understand Noreen's question is related to that, which we were talking about before the break. Hi, Noreen. Go ahead.
Hi. Can you hear me, Jennifer?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks for taking my call. So I know that I can use my computer. I have Gmail, and in my Gmail at the bottom on the left, there's a place where all of my contacts are. And I've used it when my contact is in there. Like, I can call me. When I lose my phone in the house, I use that to call me to get my phone, you know, to find it. But I can't call other people, and I don't know how to tell other people that they can call my computer.
Sounds like you need Google Voice. Yes. Google makes a phone component called Google Voice that provides a phone number and provides free calling through the internet. And you can use that. You can also use it on your cell phone as an app. But that may be that your phone is synced to your Gmail account, so you're able to contact it in the event of a missing phone, or ring yourself, but you can't ring others because you don't have the right software, and that would be Google Voice. You can have.
So it's an app that I would get on my Mac, on my laptop.
Yes, you get the app through Google, add it to your Google World, your Google account, and you can also add it to your phone as a distinct app as well.
I wonder if I can use the current phone number that I already have.
You can, except that requires something called number porting, which means that your current the company that provide. I mean, if you're using a cell phone, it would probably be wise not to port your number to Google Voice. I don't think you can, but you would need to. If you're using a landline, for instance, you would have to have the phone company release your number for porting, it's called.
Okay, I don't have a landline. So literally, the preferable thing for me to do would be to get a new number for that app.
Right, and if you're using it on your cell phone, Google Voice will ring through your cell phone, and you can answer calls normally. There are other companies that do this as well. There, you know, one company called Sideline provides, you know, secondary lines for your phone and will ring your cell phone as though it's a regular call, but you'll see that it's coming from one of those apps.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for answering that. It doesn't sound like something I want to get a new phone number to let everybody I know that I have a new phone. That would be,
if you have a Mac as well, you can also enable that your phone will ring on your computer and you can answer calls on your computer and things like that.
Yeah, Andrew, that's what I was going to say. Well, Noreen's still on the phone. I've noticed, and I did not set up anything. If I am at my home computer, which is a Mac, the phone will ring while I'm on the computer, not while I'm off.
Yes, it can be irritating.
I don't mind, but...
Do you have an Apple phone as well?
Right.
So you need to sort of dig
down.
I don't
have an Apple phone, so I wonder if that's why that doesn't happen. Okay.
That's possible.
Thank you, Noreen. Thanks for your call. A lot of people with similar questions right here. Though I'm going to change the topic a little bit because I know this is something you also want to talk about, Andrew. An email from Kelly. For those of us still working from home, what should we do to protect ourselves against the larger hacks that affect the products and services we need to use? I'm thinking specifically of the recent SolarWinds attack on Microsoft. Does that mean my Microsoft 365 account is vulnerable? And if so, what can I do to protect my information and mitigate the damage?
Wow. Well, we're all vulnerable. We're just staying one step ahead. Essentially. So the best way to do that is to continuously update your equipment. And if you haven't done that in a while, you need to go to Windows Update or make sure your Mac is fully updated. If you can, update to the newest operating system available for Mac, or at the very least, make sure that you're updating all of the security updates that come through for your operating system. But there have been a lot of these attacks that have gone into the vulnerabilities of Wi-Fi, home Wi-Fi, and as well as the way that we connect remotely. And the best way to secure your machine is by making sure that you've got an airtight Wi-Fi password as well, and that many people don't do this, but that if your Wi-Fi router supports it, make sure that you've done firmware updates on your router. And that way you're running the latest security for your router, because all of the companies that manufacture this equipment, they provide security updates. And if you don't take advantage of that, you can be exposed to a vulnerability through your Wi-Fi connector.
And we'll go to
updating. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to move on. I'm going to go to Charlotte, who's calling from Phippsburg. Hi, Charlotte. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah. My daughter gave us a pair of Alexas for my husband's birthday to prevent us basically from screaming from top of the house to the bottom of the house. I was basically against it because of security reasons, and I'm very concerned because usually we're in a very dense neighborhood, and I just was wondering whether there are still security issues with Alexa, what they might be, and how we might prevent them from getting to us.
Okay. Janet, I'm going to turn to you for this one. I know Alexa is increasingly, these smart speakers are increasingly popular, but people are concerned about security. What is your advice for Charlotte?
Well, circling back to what Andrew was saying about protecting your Wi-Fi network, because that's Alexa is, you know, connected to that. I've actually turned, you know, Alexa off because she interrupted our lives a little bit too much. And, you know, I wasn't using it for like the music and for weather issues. But I think the top advice, and, you know, I'll defer to Andrew and Jared on this one, is that, you know, Alexa is using your Wi-Fi network, and to make sure that both your Wi-Fi network is protected with a good password, as well as your Amazon account. You have a good, strong password towards Amazon. And as far as bleeding over, you know, into other people's networks and Alexa, I think Jared or Andrew might have some more information on that.
Sure, Jared, I was going to turn to you. So if Charlotte has a password on her Alexa speakers and she has a password on her Amazon account, and her neighbors are in the same situation, are they separated from each other?
Yes, essentially. I mean, think of it, your Wi-Fi network and everything that you connect to it, as long as you keep it protected with a proper password, it's like your own island. So, you know, you have, I'm sure people go to connect to Wi-Fi and you'll see other networks listed around you than in a dense area. But as long as they're locked down, they're essentially their own little island. So, you know, I've spoken about it. I've got plenty of Alexas in my house. I thought the question was going to be worried about Big Brother listening, which is always the conversation. So I'm not overly worried about it. As long as you have it secured and locked down with proper passwords with, you know, somebody like that getting access to it. And then I just wanted to add, like, in terms of this and the last question, one of the bigger ways that people need to also keep in mind, it's not just about securing your actual technical equipment for hacking and compromising information. It's also about, most of these things happen actually really not through a hack like you'd see in a movie, but they happen through social engineering and people clicking on the wrong thing or answering an email and compromising our credentials or information over to people who are looking to do harm. So we're always trying to preach to people, you really need to look at what you're clicking on, who you're talking to, you know, who you're getting help from. Google is full of just fake companies and scams that will really not actually help you. And they'll be more than happy to tell you that they're Microsoft or Apple, but really it's some random third party overseas emails collecting information. So it's really important to pay attention to what you're clicking on and what you're giving information to, because that's actually one of the bigger ways that you're going to, you know, open yourself up to vulnerabilities to being hacked or having your information, you know, put out there.
Thanks for that. And Charlotte, thank you for your question. Going in a different direction here, which a couple people have questions about. Patrick asks, my Wi-Fi is downstairs and I get slow and intermittent reception upstairs. How do I get better reception upstairs? And Deb on Facebook, how do I boost my internet access in various rooms in my house without adding a modem? Jared, I'm turning back to you.
I mean, well, except for that last part, without adding a modem, or what we really mean is another router. I mean, if you're not getting the signal reaching to where you need out of your current equipment, frankly, you're going to need new equipment. And I recommend, it can be a little bit pricier than your standard routers, but I recommend Google Wi-Fi. That's what I have in my own house. It's what we have in the office. It's what we recommend to customers. It's very easy for people to set up. It's a two-pod system where you put one in one part of the house, one in another. They work together. I've not known one person to set it up who has been disappointed, and it gets you the base system covers up to 4,400 square feet. So it goes up, it goes down, and it goes all around. It's a great system. But if you're not getting what you need out of your current hardware, then you frankly need to replace it. That's going to be your option.
And Jared, the Google Wi-Fi is also smart speakers, but people can use those as smart speakers, or if they don't want to, they don't have to, correct?
Correct. Absolutely. You could use it just as a straight. That's how I do. I personally do not use them as speakers. I just use them as the router functions.
Okay. Janet, anything to add to Jared's recommendation of Google Wi-Fi as the current, you know, sort of best option for home Wi-Fi?
I think it's definitely the best, and I can't think of another way and another product that makes it so seamless to create a mesh network in your house. I have three of them because I have, you know, some brick and stone, and you know, the setup is easy. Just about anybody can do it. And then, you know, your Wi-Fi is strong throughout your entire house. And, you know, especially for people that may now be using an unused room upstairs that's super far away from, you know, where, you know, their, you know, wireless router is, you know, school is just the best way to go. I can't really recommend anything that I think is better.
All right. Well, we do need to take another break. More of your questions for our tech gurus when we come back. This is Maine Calling.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Ocean View at Falmouth, an active retirement living campus proudly supporting Saturday Afternoon Opera, which airs tomorrow on Maine Public Classical.
I'm Tanya Mosley. Denver is trying a different approach to the way it responds to nonviolent 911 calls, sending healthcare workers from their STAR program, as they call it.
About 27% of our calls are actually officers that recognize that this is not a law enforcement-based call, and they'll actually call STAR and say, do you mind tapping in for us?
Next time on Here and Now.
Stay with us. Here and Now, upcoming shortly at 12 noon today here on Maine Public Radio. A reminder about our Maine's Political Pulse podcast and corresponding newsletter. Maine's Political Pulse is a weekly discussion on the politics here at home with our two top Maine Public News political reporters, Steve Missler and Mal Leary. The Political Pulse podcast and newsletter are both available online at mainepublic.org, and you can have the Political Pulse newsletter delivered straight to your inbox on Friday mornings by subscribing at mainepublic.org/pulse.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, answers to your tech questions. Our panelists, Jared Maxfield, who is owner of Necessary Technology, Janet McKenney, the director of library development at the Maine State Library, and Andrew Rosenstein, the owner of TechPort. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Claire is sent an email. She says, I think the caller named Jessica was asking about a global modem. Sure has worked for me. No power or cable necessary. Andrew, do you know what a global modem is?
I do not. No, that is new to me.
Jared or Janet?
My guess would be it's probably something that runs off satellite, which, I mean, anything you can take anywhere would be my guess, which is going to be an backup, but not necessarily at the speeds or service levels that we're used to, which
it runs off of the cell network, most likely.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Also, well, if I'm thinking, you know, I mean, you've got internet connections, you could technically take out on the ocean to the boat. So, I mean, if you could run off a cell connection, but there
sure,
are also technically satellite options, which I guess in power outages would be a backup.
And Claire sent a follow-up email just now. It popped up. You can buy a magic jack that will allow you to call all over the world. They work by connecting to your computer easy. The cost of the magic jack plus $30 a year. I love mine. No cell reception in Owl's Head.
Yeah, those work great. There are lots of different devices like that.
Okay, but still needs to be connected to the internet. That's not something that can be on its own, right?
Right, and that also is dependent on internet speeds as well. So sometimes a cell-based modem doesn't work that well for calling purposes. And things.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, there is. Can we talk about maybe real quick? I mean, there is hope because you know we're the SpaceX and Elon Musk are sending satellites, you know, up. A lot of people in northern Maine have actually seen some of the launches as they go floating through the sky when they get launched as a giant stream of lights. But there is hope. You know, we've talked about this, I mean, all of us here for years now, about especially as you get out of southern Maine, I mean, the internet connection issues that are global issues, but as well, especially in rural Maine. Hopefully, the projects like that, which are really more than projects now. I mean, they're working and they're moving into production. So hopefully in the next couple of years, we can be talking about how rural Maine is now hooked up to this new network. And that would actually solve a lot of the problems that we're talking about today, everything from losing power and connectivity and to slow connections and not being able to, you know, be connected to the rest of the world properly. So that it's moving forward and there's hope.
Well, there's also the process of having satellite networks that direct the signal to local Wi-Fi zones so that you won't need that final mile connection to homes, that there'll be available Wi-Fi that you can just tap into that is connected to a larger satellite network.
And Andrew, what kind of timetable are we looking for that to be a reality?
Probably in the next 5 years. That's, you know, it's going to take some time. Right now, I mean, if you need satellite internet service, there are a number of companies that provide it, but it has been noted for being a bit slow and frustrating to use. But you know, it's not something that you can easily stream movies on, although some people manage to do it. But there are some technical hurdles to overcome. But I think we'll get there, and it's a way that we don't have to wire up a large number of homes.
Go ahead, Janet. Yeah,
I would agree. I mean, there's obstacles. You know, we don't know, you know, how will weather affect it in the same way, you know, weather might affect like a DirecTV connection. The other thing is, you know, there right now for the Starlink, you know, there's an initial investment of like $500, you know, and then ongoing like $99 a month, which, you know, for somebody, you know, that has the financial ability to pay that and lives in rural Maine, this is, you know, like the hope, you know, in the next, you know, 2 or 3 years, I think, for Starlink. You know, what Andrew is talking about is then sending that Starlink thing to a local place. And so that offers a brand new, you know, number of opportunities, but again, further down the road. It's really tough in Maine because the variable of, you know, Verizon, AT&T, you know, T-Mobile or whatever, it's so spotty in different places. And our geography runs against that. And, you know, if you live along the corridor, you don't have any problems. You know, even the libraries that are lending hotspots to people, a library might have to have two different service providers for their town because on one side of the town, Verizon works, and on the other side of the town, AT&T works. So we're still struggling with that in Maine. But, you know, the satellite is a great hope going forward. And they do have a ground station up at Loring and Limestone.
Pat on Facebook writes, "My son got me an Apple Watch for Christmas. I was a little slow to set it up, but immediately upon doing so, my watch notified me that I was back in AFib, atrial fibrillation, a heart rhythm irregularity, just a week after having had a procedure to correct it. The watch can do an electrocardiogram. It's not as extensive a procedure as what you would have done in the doctor's office or a medical facility, but it is accurate, and the records the watch maintained gave my cardiologist valuable, correct information." Janet, this is one thing I definitely wanted to be able to get to on this program, is the role of all sorts of watches and fitness trackers in our lives and how they've become able to give us so much more information. And also even the ones that are basic, people using so much more. And I know you're one of them, right?
Yeah, no, I got a new Apple Watch, the latest model for Christmas. And I've started looking into, you know, a wide variety of the health things. You know, I love just, you know, like the heart monitor, which was on the previous ones, but have looked into the CardioMobile app that, you know, does the EKG, you know, and it's fascinating when we think about where we just were 10 years ago. You know, if you told people this was an option that you would have on a watch and you would be able to upload stuff, you know, to your doctor or see just for yourself where you are. So it was really interesting. I read an article that Tim Cook from Apple talked about, and he said that he thought that Apple's lasting legacy, you know, would be what they're working on regarding health and the watch and the iPhone. And so, yeah, there's stuff, you know, for diabetics, there's stuff, you know, to watch your heart. And so, you know, between your watch and your iPhone, you kind of almost have the ability to have a little mini telemedicine, you know, set up at your home. So I'm exploring all of them.
I have an email here from Ham. What kinds of security concerns are presented by not only Alexa, but smart TVs that have microphones inside? Jared?
Well, I mean, technically, a lot. You know, anytime you're putting a device in your house, I mean, everything we're pretty much putting in our homes and pockets these days has a camera and a microphone built in. So you are somewhat putting your faith in the companies of the products that you're purchasing. Hopefully you are, like we beat to death, setting up all your own proper procedures and setups. But we live in an ever-evolving world. Different hacks and things happen as technology changes. So everyone just needs to, it's part of the new world, making your own literally, you know, technology decisions. Your risk versus reward is having an Alexa in your house, you know, the potential risks worth being able to ask her what the temperature is outside and to play some music. You know, that's for each person to decide.
An email here from Judith. How does one stop calls from everywhere coming into your iPhone? I get at least 5 or 6 calls a day. I called Spectrum, but they just say to block them after they have come in. There are new ones every day. Andrew, I'm sure everyone listening right now is nodding.
Yes. Yeah. Well, Apple has introduced some more protection for spam calls. So update to the newest operating system. Apple is introducing, I think, 14 iOS 14.4 and 14.5 is in testing at this point. So each introduction of updates provides for better security. And there are a number of different spam blockers that keep records of millions and millions of numbers that are potentially spam calls. So those can be helpful too.
All right. We're going to go to Patricia, who's Patricia is calling from St. George. Hi, Patricia. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. Fabulous program. I'm not far from Owlshead, so I have terrible service also. When we built our house and found out how much it was going to cost to get electricity into the property, we said, huh, we might as well go off grid. Well, now the internet companies are telling us we can't put internet in because you don't have a utility pole. So it sounds like after listening to all this, I have to go to satellite to get internet, but I can't afford $500 and then $100 a month. Is there anything else?
Well, I mean, again, we were talking earlier about the internet-based, cell phone-based modems. I mean, if there's a cell phone provider who you do get a signal from, you're saying that it may be spotty, but sometimes Verizon or AT&T or T-Mobile may have a signal near you, and that's something you could try using. But essentially, if you don't have a utility pole, there's no place to hang any cable for internet. So that is a problem. Satellite would be the best.
We've been using hotspot on our phone, but you know it often breaks up, and in bad weather the signal is really bad. Anyways, well, yeah, we can't watch a movie maybe, but it's really important for my husband's business and to download our, you know, our automatic deposits to see what's going on. So I guess, how many satellite internet companies are there? Should I just Google it?
Well, Hughes is one of the largest. They provide satellite internet, as well as one thing that can help with cell phone internet is placing the cell phone Wi-Fi router in the highest possible place in the house. If you can get into your attic and put it up there, you know, you may have a better chance at grabbing a signal than if it's in the basement. So that can be a little more helpful, but Hughes is one of the satellite internet providers that's out there.
All right, Patrick, good luck to you. Bill on Facebook says, I am a tech coordinator at a K-8 school. Folks ask what the student going into high school should get for a tablet or computer. I tell them to think about what they may want to do in the future, whether later in high school and beyond. Janet, what do you think of that advice?
Yeah, that's what, you know, you kind of have to interview people. You know, what are you going to use this for? You know, I think previously, you know, there was like, well, if you're going to do like graphic design and all that kind of stuff, then a Mac is good because, you know, that's kind of the culture. And previously, you know, if you're going to go into engineering or, you know, like something math based or, you know, become a doctor, get a Windows machine. You know, I think the biggest thing that people should do is look to the university or college that they're going to and look at what their recommendations are. So many of them have very specific recommendations if you're applying to a certain school. You know, you're going into business or you're going into nursing or you know what your major is, and they will steer you towards the computer and the software that your college is making available. Many of the colleges have stores already set up where you can buy either a Mac or a PC or whatever one that the college or university supports.
All right. Well, I'm going to try to sneak in one more question. Barbara in Oakland, go ahead.
I need to buy a computer. It's going to have to be a used one. And it's doesn't have to do anything fancy at all, but it needs to connect to the internet. And, I was just wondering if anybody had recommendations.
Barbara, and what's your price point?
It's low. It's
okay. Jared, if somebody wants to find an inexpensive used computer, what would you recommend?
Well, depending on the price point, I mean, A, if you just want something that's going to be reliable, just get on the internet and do basic things, you could get a Chromebook, which even brand new might be a couple hundred bucks. And that'll do all of your basic functions and get you online. If you're looking for a used or refurbished computer, it is good to know where you want to spend and just look for somebody who's reputable and has a refurbished machine, hopefully with a little bit of a warranty so that, you know, you can find something adequate. But
and Jared, in just a few seconds, if Barbara hasn't heard of a Chromebook, what is that?
A Chromebook is just it's essentially a non-Windows, non-Mac. It's essentially like almost like a big cell phone or a tablet, but in a laptop form. But you can download apps, use it to access the internet, and do all of your basic things that you would need to do. And a lot of students use them. They're easy and they're rarely inexpensive, even as new machines.
All right. Well, Barbara, good luck to you. I hope you find something that serves your purposes. And thank you to our guests, as always. So great to hear your voices. The one you just heard, Jared Maxfield, the owner of Necessary Technology. Also with us, Janet McKenney, the director of library development for the Maine State Library, and Andrew Rosenstein, the owner of TechPort. Today's sound engineer was George Thomas. Maine Calling is produced by Cindy Hahn and Jonathan Smith. Tomorrow on the program, the Maine real estate market. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.